Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast, and welcome Jack and James, the founders of Free Train. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Very good, thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you both here and to be back in the studio yet again. I'm loving recording with people again, not just dialing in via Zoom from my home. And I'll be honest, I'm really excited to have this conversation today for two reasons. So firstly, what I've read about you both, I really have loved researching the journey. I love the story. And so I can't wait to get into all of that. I've got loads of questions. And secondly, because for any of the listeners who are familiar with Free Train, the brand, and also the Free Train, specifically the running vest, then they've probably seen me wearing it on Instagram. I am a customer of yours. I bought the product a few years ago, I think. And I've even bought them as gifts for other people. We see them everywhere. You cannot go to a London park and see people running or cycling without seeing your Free Train running vest product. They are everywhere. So congratulations on that, on the success.
Oh, thanks very much. It's really nice to hear.
Are you aware of that, or you like, do you know what I mean? Do you know that literally everywhere you go, you see people wearing them?
We get told that, but it's one of those things where on a daily basis, we don't see it too much, and we always get texts and pictures sent by other people. So it's like this whole world going on outside of what we see on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, to speak to you and hear that, that's fantastic.
Awesome. Well, before we dive in, and also some people might be listening and going, Free Train, what is that vest? If they haven't seen it, where have you been? So we're going to dive into all of that. But first, James, can you tell us a bit about how you and Jack met, and take us back to the start of this story?
Sure. So we actually met 10 years ago. We both come from a professional footballing background, and I just left Warsaw. I was on the lookout for a new club. I'd had a few trials and stuff and deals that had fallen through. And then I just started training with Burton Albion, where Jack was already there previously. And we actually got sort of squashed together. So I'd been there for a couple of weeks. I'd signed. And then one of the senior players said, you know, you guys should travel in together. And it's always a bit of an awkward standoff because you're looking across the dressing room at this guy that you've never really met before. And, you know, you're going, do we have the same interest? Who's going to fight over the music and whatnot, sitting in the car? And then it just turns out you meet at the McDonald's in the morning. You've got a half an hour journey. Tunes start going on. And then you start going, do you know what? We've got a lot in common. So we started talking from then on, and a real friendship has blossomed over the last 10 years. And I think that has been one of our positive things, is because we are and always were friends beforehand who have similar interests, similar morals, and similar thought processes. So, you know, it's been a fantastic journey for us to play football, separate, and then we met back up again at Nuneaton. And then that's when our visions changed, and we started looking away from football and started looking at something else, which is ultimately what you see today in Free Train.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I definitely want to, I guess, loop back in a moment to that, the friendship part of starting a business, because I think a lot of entrepreneurial people will be thinking about, you know, if they start a business either with their partner or with friends, how they navigate and protect that relationship. So yeah, I definitely want to loop back to that. Jack, anything to add about, I guess, yeah, thinking back to the football days when you were training to, yeah, I guess, professional football, professional sport? That was, I guess, before thinking about, yeah, starting a business. Had you always grown up thinking, that's what I want to do? Were you one of those boys, I'm going to be a footballer, and then you did it?
I think if you want to be a professional at sports especially, I think you've almost got to have that mindset. I think most sports people would say that. Certainly from a younger age, when it was, I say, less pressure, I thought, I want to be a footballer, this is everything. Every second I get, I want to kick a ball around. So definitely had that belief and that want to be a professional early on. I think the older you get, certainly from my point of view, when the pressure started to come on, I think things changed slightly. I think you I certainly felt the pressure at, you know, kind of 17, 18 when things started to get serious. Still have that belief that you want to make it, but I probably started just questioning myself a little bit and questioning my ability from the pressures that were on me, really. But the good thing about that is, as I've gone on through my career in other aspects, the pressure that, let's say, we feel in like a business environment now is far less than when I was 18, because at the time it was like I didn't think there was any, couldn't be any more pressure, and it kind of taught me, you know, how to deal with that, how to kind of, yeah, just maneuver through it, really. Mm. So I'm glad it happened, but yeah, it's a very tough thing to do, make it as a professional. Mm. And I think, you know, football, the dropout rate and the people that actually make it from, you know, 18 is so small. Mm. You know, and at the time you believe you're going to make it, and I think almost the quicker you can realise to make it and have a career out of it, you've got to be exceptional. And you know, in hindsight, looking back, you'd probably have a bit more of a backup plan. But you have to be tunnel visioned, absolutely, and believe you're going to make it.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I hear you on the mindset part. You have to believe, of course, if you're going to dedicate yourself to a sport, to any sport, and to being a professional. I'm always absolutely, you know, inspired and in admiration of people that dedicate their lives to sport, because it does take so much. But then, as you said, if you have that in your mind that, well, actually, I need to have a backup plan, then yeah, maybe are you going to be all in 100%? And you mentioned pressure a lot there. I'd like to kind of go back on that. Where at that time you said, you know, when the pressure was on at 18, it was really, really tough, and that served you now. But where was that pressure, do you think, coming from? Was that external? Was it pressure you put on yourself? Was it from, I don't know, your coaches, your peers? Where was that pressure that you felt?
Well, at the time when I was 18, I was at Aston Villa and looking to get my pro contract, and the couple of years before that, 16, 17. I think it was external from the coaches and from the environment we were in, because I think at the time Villa were in the European Cup spots, and it was, you know, a Premier League club. And to think you've got to get to the first team, it was like, I've really got to be good. And you start to, you know, that you're being judged all the time as to whether you're going to get a pro contract. You know, they don't just hand them out, you know, to anyone. So you feel like you're being judged, whether that's around the training ground, whether that's on the pitch. And, you know, having the mindset where you feel the pressure, you make a mistake, and you think, ah, maybe I don't want to do that again, or I don't want to get the ball, where you flip it round. I think the people that have the mindset that can really kick on in that football environment almost have that, doesn't matter what anyone else thinks, I know I'm good enough. Mm. And I think if you can have that strong belief and not have that, you know, impacted by anyone, you see those people go further. I think you really need that I'm going to be the best mentality, and I let the pressure, you know, looking back now, just listen to too many people's opinions, and then started thinking, am I quite good enough? And then, funnily enough, when I left the Villa, and when I linked up with James at Burton, which was a drop down in standards, it was League Two as opposed to Premier League, I felt like, you know, all the pressure was off. And then, funnily enough, my performances were a lot better then, started enjoying it more. So it's so easy to look back now and think, I could see the problem, I just let the pressure get to me. Mm-hmm. But I do think it was from the environment, yeah. Very, very pressure.
Yeah, it's so interesting hearing that. I think it's also, you know, we all have different personalities, and, you know, as a mother, I certainly see, you know, I go and watch my son on the sideline, and it's he plays football and it's fun, and, you know, kids are supposed to enjoy it, they're 10, but already, like you say, the coaches, the parents, it's actually, honestly, sometimes it's comedy, I have to laugh, because they're, you know, it's good that the parents are so invested, but you do think, flipping heck, every time they get the ball, you know, someone shouting something at them, you know, whether it's to get in a space, whether it's to, you know, pass here, do this, do that, like, head up, you know, that's your you stand there and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I feel by the second half, like, the anxiety, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for this to be over. And it's just supposed to be fun. We forget. I mean, it's very different what you're describing. You know, that is, you know, professional sport, very, very different. But I do think that the mindset that you were describing, where some, whether it's children, whether it's adults even, sometimes that pressure can help you to perform at your best. You can go, right, when the eyes are on me, when the spotlight's on me, that is when I shine. Actually, I had a CrossFit athlete, Matt Fraser, on the podcast, and he said exactly that. He said he was a performer. Mm. When it mattered the most, when there were 10,000 people watching, he could deliver then, and only then. He couldn't even do it when he was just training. Whereas I think some people, it's definitely the way around. You know they can do it, whether it's singing in their bedroom, whether it's, you know, performing a sports, something in sports, and then when the pressure's on, they feel the nausea, they buckle, they crumble, and they just, it's so frustrating probably for them, because it's like, hang on, this is when I need to be able to deliver it, and now I can't do it.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's true. And I think, you know, at the same time, I don't want it to sound like all negative. There's some great moments and stuff there. But I think, yeah, the quicker you can mature, I think you can almost take a step outside and look at what that pressure is and then utilise it in the best way, you know, not get too worked up for things, you know, not get too nervous because you're going to lose your energy and stuff, but appreciate the situation and try and channel it in the right way. And I think the quicker you can do that, again, you see the top athletes, the quicker they can identify that, the better. For me, when I dropped down a level and the pressure was off, I thought the pressure was off, started to relax, started to play better, even in front of bigger crowds and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it was just a case of, yeah, channeling that, using the pressure, because, you know, like you say, pressure can be a good thing. Mm. You know, you can have your best performances under pressure. In training, you don't get it. So I just think it's, yeah, managing it and figuring out how to use it, and everyone will be different in that aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you met in football, and like I say, we've gone back, and am I right in thinking that was it for both of you actually that you had injuries, and was that the reason that you stopped playing football, or was that just one of the factors?
I'd say one of the factors, definitely. Yeah. I think life takes over and you get to a certain age where you have decisions to make. I think as you sort of drop down the levels and stuff, you know, your kind of enjoyment or your love of the things which sort of tick the boxes for you, they can dwindle away. From my perspective, it was the bigger crowds that really got my buzz. And I think the more you drop down and say the level kind of diminishes a little bit, you start looking elsewhere and you start actually looking away from this thing that you follow for the last 10, 15 years of your life. And you go, right, then this is time to actually build my life. There is something on the other side of the fence. You know, and that comes in terms of relationships, you know, life goals, children, and that sort of thing. And then your responsibilities change. Mm. I think as your responsibilities change, your mindset changes.
Mm.
And I think that's where we started looking at other things like normal life and actual proper jobs and that sort of thing.
Proper jobs.
Yeah, proper jobs. And then, you know, you kind of find that balance and you go, right, what is it I actually want to do for the rest of my life?
Mm. Okay, so I'm going to fast forward a little bit because I'm sure there's a lot of things that go on from there to where you are today. So what was, I guess, the initial start of Free Train? Did you get together and go, right, we want to start a business, let's come up with 20 different ideas and pick the best one? Or did you come together with this in mind? How did that start?
So, again, I think this is where we're sort of dropping down the levels and we were playing for Nuneaton. And I think the truth of the matter was we weren't really enjoying it. We were training twice a week. We were driving in thinking, oh, my God, this is terrible. How long is this going to last for? And, you know, we go, right, we've got to get out of this. We've got to do something where we don't need to rely on football anymore. We had our day jobs and stuff, but that wasn't really what was getting our buzz going. And we had loads of ideas in the car, so we'd be sitting driving, what about this? We actually came up with the idea of a portable blender.
Mm-hmm.
This was about 8 years ago. You know, and we kind of just dropped that and we didn't actually go through with it. Turns out someone's done that today.
Oh.
I think they've made fortunes off it. But, you know, so we had stuff like that. We wanted to build houses. And then you start going, is that really viable? Can you do this? And then we actually came up with an idea for an app, which mm-hmm. we were running with for about a year. And then you realise how expensive it is to get an app off the ground. And you think about these are the means and these are the ways to do it. And we came to the conclusion of actually making a physical product.
Yeah.
You know, whether we sell something that already exists. And I remember it was actually in the summer and we'd both been training in the off season, both been out running. Similar thing, you're out running with your phone in your hand, headphone wires going everywhere, your hands getting sweaty, you're changing over. And the idea just popped up, what about something that can hold your phone?
Hmm.
It's like, oh, it's like a eureka moment. And we just started spitballing. We had some made. I think the original one, we bought some neoprene, and Jack's grandmother actually stitched the first one together and it looked like a bulletproof vest. And we were like looking at it in the car park. I actually remember this, we were in the car park of the gym and we had it on. It was a bit like, we can't really run with this though, can we?
Like being chased.
Yeah, literally, yeah. It looked like something from Line of Duty. So then in the end, we decided to go home, cut one out of a t-shirt, the shape, which isn't too dissimilar from the one that we've got now, but it was just a t-shirt. Mm. So then we had to start the process and, you know, yeah, really start developing it and getting the right materials, the right balance and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this. I love hearing the story, the journey. You know, like I said, having an idea is one thing. A lot of people have ideas. A lot of people have good ideas, but they might not have the will, they might not have the skills, the access, whatever it is, to execute on that idea and to really build it and to say, okay, let's build a prototype, or let's do some research into this market. Let's see if this idea can become a product. And also, I think what I'd say is people often say, well, everything's been done now. So I'm sure, let's be honest, going for a run, there were options available, right? So there were maybe arm running cases, maybe there were ones that go around your waist that like bang up and down, maybe there's like pockets on shorts. So there's some things out there. It's not like no one's ever thought of, okay, where do people want to put their phone? But you clearly found something that was an underserved market, because people still, as you know it yourself, right? People ask you, like, well, where can I put your keys? Where do you put your phone? Like, how do you do this when you're out running? And I think the phone is probably the thing that people want the most, because they're listening to music, or they're listening to the Power Hour podcast, or they may be using it for the map, Strava, Map My Run, all of these things. So I think, yeah, you definitely had it right. People want to have their phones on them at all times, you know, let's be honest. And yes, I guess there must have been a gap where people, I think personally, as a customer, just giving you my feedback, I feel like you really nailed that design of making it look good. And also, it doesn't move. That was the thing, you know, your phone, whatever I used before, it's moving around. And so the fact it doesn't move, and the fact that it does look good. I remember wearing it once with like a sports bra and shorts, and it was summer, and my son was like, I think he said it looked like a Tomb Raider, you know? And he was like, oh, it's cool. And I remember thinking, yeah, you know, I can take that. It looks pretty cool. So I think you definitely, you've obviously cracked it. So you started there. Then what? You know, how did it go from that to where it is today? Jack, I'm going to go back to you.
Well, that's the long question. There's, we touched on it earlier. There's so much that happened in between that. I mean, yeah, we knew that this idea would work, and we had these prototypes made quite local to us, and we started testing them, and we're thinking, yeah, like this really does work. And you know, we would be our normal customers, you know, so we're thinking, well, if this does work and we can make it a bit cooler, like you say, and it fits good and whatnot, then we knew we had something. And then once we knew we had something, to get to where we are now, there's been so many interesting things that have happened. I think the first thing we thought was, well, how do we get this made? We started making it locally in Wolverhampton. We found a clothing manufacturer, and we thought, well, if we can get the the materials in, because it's, you know, made of like a neoprene, we couldn't get that in the UK, so we thought, well, if we can get that, get it made in Wolverhampton, which wasn't the best way to do it in terms of how much it cost us to make, but we got a product made, and we had 500 made to start with. And then again, the feedback was fantastic, because people were saying what we believed: this does work. It's really, really simple, but it solves that problem of like, when we're going to put the phone when I'm running. Mm. So once we got the feedback from the exterior people, you know, that this does work, it was like, right, we're onto something here. And then it was a case of, we've got to find, you know, manufacturers. We've got to think about how this might, you know, go into a business. We've got to kind of get the products in. We've got to sell them. How much should we sell it for? There's nothing else out there like it. So it was just, that's the benefit of having the two of us, because everything we've done to this day, without telling you, like I say, there's so much that have happened as to how we are today, but we just figure it out. And I think that's, you know, what James touched on earlier in terms of like how we met and how we move forward. It's been great having two of us. And also, I think a great takeaway is surrounding yourself with people where you can just, you know, you've got the same things in common, where you can bash an idea together and then come out with an outcome. And whether that's, you know, right or wrong, we come out with an outcome. And to where we were to where we are now, we've just had to figure it out. There was no real blueprint we followed. You know, how do we find a manufacturer? Well, we'll go on Google. We'll look on YouTube. I think that's the beauty of the world we're in now. Most of the answers are out there. It's just a case of figuring them out. And with two of us, I believe we've made a lot of right decisions to get to where we are now. Yeah. But you know, there's so many ups and downs, so many funny stories. Going out to China, you know, finding manufacturers without any experience whatsoever, you know.
I mean, going out there
as complete novices, it was like there's 10 stories from our first trip to China.
I bet. I wish you'd taken a GoPro or a video and vlogged that experience, because I guess, I mean, before we go into that, you know, hearing that you made it up as you went along, essentially, I love that. I think so often people will say, well, I don't have the expertise for that, or I don't know somebody there, or how can I do this? And they almost want, like you said, a blueprint. They want someone else to tell them, here's the step-by-step guide, here's what you need to do. When, of course, if you can find that, then, you know, of course, get information and do research. But I think what I love about this is you're not from a fashion or marketing background. You're not from, you know, you didn't maybe go to business school, design school. You've just said, this is a product, this is an idea. Let's test and learn. Let's get 500. Let's figure out how to get it manufactured. Just do. You know, take action. And by taking action, you will learn, you'll course correct, you'll get feedback, and you can keep doing and you can keep going. And it's not to say that every person who has an idea is going to start a business that will have the success that you've had. But I do think it's a really powerful, honest story to go, this is how we did it. And that, I think, should inspire people to go, actually, it's doing the work. Nothing can replace doing the work, you know, putting in the time. One question I would ask, though, which maybe some of the listeners might be thinking, is did you have to have capital? You know, did you have to have a cash injection? Did you both have to invest some money and go, okay, we're going to put this much in? Or did you kind of do it all as strict and as bare as possible? What was that like?
I think that's one of the magic things is we started coaching at a local school, so we thought we're going to have to raise some money to get, like, the first samples made, the first 500. So we went to local school, we pitched to them, we'd teach the teachers fitness classes, the kids after school classes, whether that's boxer size, keep fit. So we went there with a little business plan even for that, again with no real experience, and then we managed to get like a 6-month contract teaching after school classes. So we did that with the teachers, did it with the kids, and managed to save some money to put into the first stage of development, the first units, because without that we just wouldn't have done it. But again, we didn't just go and get a handout off someone. We thought, right, well, how do we do this? And I think that shows the longevity in it. I think a lot of people want that quick answer. That's, oh, we need this money, let's just do that. We thought, well, this is probably 6 months away from us raising this money. There's no shortcut to that. We've got to go and earn it. And we did that. We went and teaching schools, fitness classes.
Wicked. See, again, I love it. Putting in the time, putting in the effort, going, okay, we need some cash, let's go out. And it's kind of that old school mindset, right, that a lot of entrepreneurs talk about. We see these entrepreneurs once they've, you know, built a tech company, or once they're millionaires or whatever. And often they'll say, yeah, back in the day, I used to go out and wash cars, or I used to go out and walk dogs, or I'd do whatever I could to get the coins up, to get the cash together, to do the next part. And, you know, I think that is maybe the part that we don't always see and celebrate, especially with the online culture. You know, it's like we all want to see the end story and the highlights reel. But I think that bit for me is, I don't know, I feel like that's almost the best bit, you know, like rolling up your sleeves, getting started. I'm someone who loves it. I love the start of things. I think that part's maybe the bit that I enjoy the most, actually.
Yeah, no, I'd completely agree. I think it is a true word in terms of entrepreneur or entrepreneurship, but I think that word almost glamorizes what it actually is. And I think as we've moved forward, we've always never called ourselves entrepreneurs, but more so problem solvers. We look at problems and we solve them, i.e. there's a problem with carrying your phone in your hand or bouncing around your waist, or where do you put your keys, where do you put your phone? And we just solve problems individually as we see them. The same thing for raising the money. You know, there's no secret bank, there's no wishing well of funds. So how do we go out and we make money? And then we use our own tools, our own backgrounds in fitness and football and whatnot, and we solve problems with the tools that we have.
And so how has it accelerated? Because like I said, it seems like you've had, you know, so much success, and I feel as though, you know, these things don't just happen by accident. So again, marketeer's hat on, I feel like, were you very specific from the start about, okay, this is who our customer's going to be, this is the demographic, this is you know, how we're going to price it, this is where we're going to market it, for example, you know, with social media, influencer marketing? Did you focus specifically on football, or did you focus on runners? Like, how did that evolve? Because I feel like from an outside looking in, it did look very slick and intentional, like a really well thought out marketing plan. But often I'm always surprised, and I would never want to assume, because sometimes people go, no, it was an accident, actually we designed this to be one thing and then the market told us it was something completely different and our customers weren't what we expected. So yeah, which way around was it for you?
No, it's definitely gone the way that we thought it would. And it's definitely hit the people that we wanted it to hit. But there was no real master plan in there. It was very much what gets our buzz. So it was down to, say, people who influenced us. So again, that word influencer is more so about the person who you resonate with. So people who we resonated with, we wanted them to have the product. Things we wanted to see on Instagram from a brand, we tried to do. And, you know, we stretched ourselves quite thin in terms of marketing, because what we did was is we saw a level of quality in terms of our image and thought, if we saw another brand with those images taken on iPhones of the two same people over and over again, it's never going to take off. People aren't going to buy into it. And we realized that the more that we invest into the visual side of the brand and, say, the desire, the more the desire would come back to us, and it was sort of like one hand washed the other.
I love it. I mean, I could talk about marketing and brand all day long, which I'm sure for some people is not the most interesting and engaging topic, but I think it's fascinating because ultimately it's behavior economics, right? It's looking at what people do, why they do it, what they spend money on, how much they're willing to spend, and why. And I think often, you know, if you think about some of the biggest brands in the world, they might not be selling a product that is that different to anybody else's, but it's the brand, it's the association of, if you're this kind of person, you wear these kind of clothes, or you go to this kind of place. And whether we like it or not, whether we kind of say, oh, that's capitalism and that's gross, regardless, we are all influenced by others and things. We, you know, we don't live in isolation. I always say we live with others. So how have you protected your working relationship? You know, you were friends first. How have you navigated and kept that? And how do you, you mentioned making decisions, you know, different skill sets, you each bringing different things to the table. But ultimately, was it ever said, you know, like, oh, our friendship needs to come first? Because business, can they say, don't mix work and pleasure. So how have you navigated that?
I think you're right. A lot of people will say that, don't do it. I'd like to give you some, you know, detailed explanation to this, but I've not once really overthought it. James might say something different, but like, I don't think you need to really overthink it. I think you wouldn't go into business with someone that, let's say, you don't trust or is not, you don't see them having benefits. But we've just gone through this and, you know, like, just figured it out as we've gone. Like, I can't say we looked and said, well, in 3 years' time, we've got to be careful of this, because if we're friends now and business gets like intense and stuff. I think it's one of those things, it's just figured itself out on the way. And I think there's some real positives to it. Yes, it's been stressful at times, and you do think at times this business side of it is so intense. Mm. As long as you can come away from that occasionally, and let's say, whether it's, I don't know, trips away, for example, where you can get that friendship thing and, oh yeah, we're great pals as well. When it does get intense, as long as you can keep hold of that. Mm. But I think from a business point of view, if you choose to go into business with the right partner and you'll have certain similarities and certain polar opposites, I think that's where you get the magic. And, you know, looking back now, we've had, you know, like, you know, certain, I might think one thing, James might think another, and that's where the gold has come, because the outcome to that can often be like almost like it's got two sides, so it's got two brains to get to the correct outcome. I think it moves the less mistakes, so to speak, because you've got two kind of brains deciding one answer. That's my answer to it. I've not overthought it.
Yeah, it sounds great, and taking those learnings on with you. So, with all that said, tell us, if you can, what you're working on next. What are you excited about for the Free Train future?
Well, I think we've got a few big years coming up. I think, you know, circling back to what you said before about the overall plan and the business plan, we always knew that one product was never going to last forever, and there were always going to be competitors. There were always some people out there that would look at what we're doing and either try and copy it or, you know, try and do something slightly different. Again, you have to stay current as a business and as a brand. And, you know, I think we had this conversation about two and a half years ago now about evolving. And, you know, we're kind of at the stage now where we've sold a decent amount of units and our name is quite decent, and we're planning on expanding into performance apparel now. So,
is this an exclusive? Do people know about this yet?
No, you are the first person.
Exclusive.
First person to know about this.
Love that. Heard it here first on the podcast. I love that. That's really, really exciting. And I mean, as you know, as the listeners will know, I'm someone who wears a lot of performance apparel, you know, as a runner, as someone who trains. And yeah, I think that's really, really exciting. I'm excited to see what comes next, where it goes.
Yeah, scary.
Yeah, so are we. It's been a long time coming. You know, from when we had the conversation, we said, right, we're going to quit our jobs, we're going to go for it. Amazing journey with the vest, you know, as an accessory, as a problem solver, fantastic. But our vision has always been to create Free Train as a brand, and really what the conversations we have behind closed doors and what we really want to create, if we can, you know, make other people believe in that, which we do believe we can, I think that'll be a success, because the brand we believe we can create and we're on the path to creating is something really special. And we hope you'll believe in that too when you see the stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I guess, you know, it's always nice to hear as well. You're probably you know, work with young people, you probably talk to a lot of young people. I'm sure you get a lot of questions from people, but who, I guess, do you go to for advice? Who do you look to? Who, I guess, yeah, is, do you have external people that are a sounding board for you, as well as obviously being business partners yourselves?
To be completely honest, a lot of it happens internally.
Right.
I think, again, just going back to the fact that there's two of us, we pull things in from other directions. We're always watching what other people are doing. We always look at brands the likes of Nike and say, what have they done well? What haven't they done well? But I think ultimately you look at some of the brands out there, and we're not going to name any of them, but there's a few out there that try and emulate to the nth degree other certain brands, and you can see it a mile off. Mm. And I think the one thing, as we said, is everything that we create is in our own image, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. is what we want to create. So it's down to our values, i.e., you know, and it's not to tick a box, it's because we believe in it. So our items, the majority of them have a recycled or organic element to them. In terms of the people that we want to represent, as I think is quite obvious, we look very different, mm-hmm. almost like we wouldn't share the same car on the way to training. Mm-hmm. You know, so we bring our own experiences and our experiences of the world, and we're trying to create a brand that is for everyone, mm-hmm. and the diversity within the company, mm-hmm. and that extends to our staff as well, mm-hmm. who are fantastic. We want to emulate that, and a brand is more than just the products that you sell. It's the feeling that it gives the consumer. And ultimately, that is what we've been working towards for the last 2 years, really.
Mm. Yeah, good for you. And I guess for audio listeners who are thinking, well, actually, I don't know what they look like. James, how would you describe what you look like?
I don't know.
I could describe you. I would describe you as looking like a very young, well, you're a black man, young, fresh-faced as well. I don't know how much you found that in the business world of people going, hang on a minute, how old are you? Are you old enough? And then James, obviously being a white man, also looking very young and fresh, I'll be honest. And
you'd have led with like 6'4" then.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Sorry, he's 6'4". He's very attractive. But I think also being northern and not, you know, being, I guess, like, down to earth, real people. I know that sounds strange, but I guess sometimes people do think of the way you look, the way you present. Coming in, and someone said to me this morning, actually, in a meeting, they said, oh, they didn't know how to dress for it because it's quite a big corporation where we were going, and they said, oh, you know, wanted to put on a shirt and tie, and there is that feeling of you've got to look a certain way, or there's an expectation there. So yeah, I'd say two young guys who look like normal guys.
Yeah. No, I think just alluding to that there, what you just said about not necessarily looking like your typical entrepreneur or businessman or whatever, there are some doors to kick down that we do kick down, and that we know you can't kick down instantly, but over a period of time, give us half an hour, a couple of days, and you'll see that we are, without blowing our own trumpets here, the real deal, especially as a pair.
Yeah, definitely. And like, you know, I think I said it earlier, but it's so true, like the conversations and the things we talk about, which we want to try and have an impact on people, the real DNA of what we're about as a duo and what the brand is about as a whole, like if we can get that magic across, which we really believe we can, then it will be special, because we know the core values are,
true.
They're one of a kind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck. As I said, I don't know how much you knew that I knew your company, but I think, yeah, as soon as I think someone from your team reached out, and I was like, wicked. I was like, I use this vest, I've used it for a long time. And like I said, just seeing the evolution of your brand over the last few years, I don't know how much the pandemic accelerated, you know, everybody was out running and it seemed like everybody was wearing the vest. So it's been exciting to watch. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next, and yeah, I really hope that it's a continued success.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Right, let's talk about the Power Hour. So this part of the show, I love to find out from my guests what motivates them to get up in the morning, what inspires them, what the first hour of their day is like, how intentional or unintentional they are with that first hour of time. And for me at the moment, you know, the listeners, if they listen every week, they'll know a lot about my power hour, so they don't need to hear any more about that. But what I'd say is coming up for me at the moment is this real, I find it difficult to focus at the best of times, but at the moment, I think coming out of the pandemic where we're getting into hybrid, you know, some things are in person, some things are online, we're trying to do both, we're managing a lot, the world seems to be getting busier again, and this word busy I try to not to associate myself with, and I feel like focus is so hard for me right now. Some days I just think, what am I focusing on today? So this week especially, I've started to really take my own advice, go back to my, you know, power hour and be really intentional to try and find focus. So over to you. Let's start with Jack. What is your power hour like? Typically, what time do you get up and what do you do with the first hour of your day?
Well, I'm gonna, might sound like a bit of a weirdo here, but I'm pretty structured in the morning time. So I do the same thing every morning. I wake up at 5 o'clock. I go downstairs, I have 2 glasses of water and a double espresso, and then I'll do 45 minutes of exercise, whether that's be running, boxing with James, swimming, biking, and then a few weights. So I like to, my first hour basically is exercise, come back, have a shower and ready for the day, get my overnight oats out the fridge, and that happens every single day apart from Sunday where I have a game of golf. But for me, that's over the years of learning. My personal goal is to just be the best version of myself. I know that sounds quite cliche, but it is, whether that's in, you know, relationships, work, sport, and that little power hour, I know that so far that's the best version of how I can do it. I'm always trying to unlock new things, whether it's, you know, meditation stuff, but for me right now, exercise first thing in the morning, get a sweat on, have a nice shower, ready for the day. Simple as I can explain it.
I love it. I didn't even pay him to say that. You see that? I feel like there's the perfect power hour guest. But, you know, not that there's any right or wrong way, but, you know, definitely the repetition part. You know, when you said, oh, it might be strange to do the same thing every day, I don't think that is strange. I think for someone who is busy and you probably have to make lots of decisions in the day, you might have to be creative, you might have to think about lots of things. Personally, I think the repetition piece of knowing that I open my eyes, I do this, I do this, I do this, and you know it's going to start you off in the right way, it takes out the decision making. You don't want to be making decisions surely first thing in the morning thinking, what am I going to do? Like, am I going to exercise? Am I not? What exercise am I going to do? I think having that repetition is really, really powerful.
Yeah.
James, what do you do first thing in the morning?
Well, we were saying we've got morals to the core, but...
do you live together?
No.
Okay. I was like, wow.
But we're probably polar opposites on this front. On the whole, I'm a 5 o'clock starter myself.
Yeah.
We will train most of the time, but I am not as rigid as Jack is in that sense. My only sort of rigidity is on a Monday morning. I like to get in for 6 a.m. when no one else is there. I get to do all of my little bits, get into the zone, play my tunes. But as a whole, I live life quite flexibly around my structure, if that makes sense. So with work and my kids and stuff, on the other side of it, I will sort of go where the wind takes me. So on the whole, I will wake up at 5. Have my coffee, have a cold shower, get myself going, and then I will meet Jack down the gym most of the days. We'll do a little bit of training together, and then I'll go and take my kids to school. But on the whole, I am the type of person that I believe if I wake up at 5 in the morning one morning and I'm not feeling it, I will rest that day, purely because I think, you know, it's like anything in the world, anywhere where there's no, where it's summer all year round, nothing grows. So I believe that every now and then, if you're not feeling right, you take that rest, and then you go again the next day. As long as that doesn't become a habit, you know, you'd be fine.
Yeah, I like that. Finding that balance of self-compassion or being aware versus, as you said, it becomes a habit and you're letting yourself off the hook and you're thinking, oh, tomorrow I'll do it. Because I think that's where a lot of people struggle, to be honest. They're all or nothing. So they say to me, Adrian, I have to do it every single day because if I miss it once, oh, that's it. I can't be bothered and I'm off. So it's nice to know that actually you can go with it, as you say, be a bit more relaxed. And how old are your kids?
My oldest is 11, And then I've got Angelo, who's 6, and Gio, who is 4 next month.
Wow. Okay, so you're busy. Yeah.
Yeah, very busy.
Yeah, love it. Great. Well, thank you so much, both of you. You've been absolutely incredible guests. And as I said, I was so excited to find out more about the people behind, because I think there's probably a lot of products that we all maybe buy and know and love, and we don't know who the founders are. Was that intentional? Sorry, I feel like I'm going off on a new unplanned question, but was it intentional, or are you going to move on to be, you know, the faces of the brand, or did you always think actually we're going to let the brand be faceless?
Yeah,
it's been in part of the plan. Yeah. One thing we never wanted it to be about us too. We wanted Free Train to take centre stage, which it has. We understand there's an element of people are intrigued and people want to know, but I think timing is key. And like most things, we talked about it enough. We know when it's going to happen, so we will come out from the brand a little bit as we're doing now. This is the first podcast. But yeah, Free Train is absolutely the focus, not us.
Great. Well, I'm honoured. So thank you so much. And thanks everyone for tuning in. As always, I appreciate it. Have an awesome week and stay safe. See you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.